Welcome to Doctor Who On Target. A podcast where we discuss the target range of classic Doctor Who novelizations from the 1970s and 80s. Those long ago days where, if you missed Doctor Who on TV, you missed it forever. Unless, of course, you bought the Target novelisation. So, join us, jump aboard the TARDIS, set the time rotor for late 20th century Earth, and, with a wheezing, groaning sound, we'll discuss Doctor Who on Target. Welcome to Doctor Who on Target. This is Greg in Swansea.
And this is David in Chelmsford.
And we look in this week at the episode which aired last Saturday, Smile by Frank Cottrell Boyce. Now, he's got a little bit of a something to live down, I think, his previous episode.
Right.
I think you liked it, David, didn't you, his previous?
I did quite like the previous episode.
Yeah,
that he wrote with the trees protecting the earth.
Yes, yeah.
It was sort of a very eco-aware, nice twist.
Yeah. I liked the sort of fairy tale like atmosphere.
That's a very good way of putting it. It was a fairy tale.
Yeah, I did like that, but ultimately, I felt a little bit let down by that. But what did you think then? So you were quite positive coming into this episode, Smile, were you?
I was quite positive, yes.
And
the episode started, and the pre-title sequence, I think we'll probably talk about it later, but I always think that if you want to keep someone happy, the best way to do that is not to mention to them that their family had just been massacred. So I think that's going to put a downer on most people's moods. So if it was imperative to keep smiling,
Yes. Probably
not the best thing to say. But nevertheless, that character did so.
Yeah.
And the sort of the little nanobots ate them both, which was quite a dramatic for the pair of them. But I thought, oh dear, I hope it doesn't carry on in this ironically comic vein. Otherwise, I'm going to struggle. But when the episode proper started, I was really, really fired up and enjoying the story very much.
Yeah.
I think we should mention it now. I thought that the Peter Capaldi Pearl Mackey relationship is actually really, really good.
Yeah.
And it got better on last week.
Yes.
Mm.
It's had a lot of positive comments from the press, the reviews, their relationship.
I must admit, I haven't read a single press review because I've been away from home. But I think that the reason that I'm enjoying it is because it strikes me as a more traditional doctor-companion relationship.
Ah, that's
something that you could have got in the classic era.
That is interesting.
When there's no sort of doctor crush going on in the background.
Yes, yeah. That is really interesting, actually.
A mentor than a potential conquest, I think.
Yes.
I think they've got to a point in New Who where the companions were supposed to be the equal of the doctor.
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't think that's the way the show's dynamic has ever worked.
No. And
yes, that was very, very positive. I enjoyed the way that relationship is going. And something else, actually, that I had thought of last week, but I didn't say it because I thought I was being ridiculous. I thought the character of Bill, I thought that Stephen Moffat had called the character Bill as some sort of tribute to William Hartnell. Bill Hartnell. And I thought to myself, don't be so ridiculous. Of course he hasn't done that. But of course, going back to last week's episode, William Hartnell was married to an actress called Heather McIntyre, or Heather Hartnell, as she was known in Doctor Who circles. And of course, Bill's crush last week was called Heather. So I'm now more and more convinced that it was utterly deliberate. And I think if it is deliberate, I think that's rather a nice sort of tip of the hat towards the origins of Doctor Who. So I'm very pleased with that. I enjoyed that, and I'm pleased to have worked it out.
That is really good, actually. I hadn't noticed that. Yeah, that absolutely must be right. Yeah, that's absolutely fascinating, actually, David. I'm that's a real puzzle that's been put in there. I'm so pleased you said about that. I love those little pieces in there, which they can, you know, if you don't know, it doesn't matter. But when you do know, it gives you that little sneaky bit of pleasure, doesn't it?
Well, it does. I mean, there's something that the Doctor said in this episode as well, when he said to one of the emoji bots, he said, "I'm happy. Hope you're happy too." Which, of course, is quoting David Bowie.
Yes.
But you don't need to know that.
No, no.
To people of my generation who remember Ashes to Ashes when it was in the charts.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think that's a nice little Easter egg for us old people.
Yes, it is. Well, I mean, as for Smile, I felt very much like you. I like the opening scene. I do think it is a much more traditional relationship between the Doctor and Bill, which I thought she was a little frenetic last week, but she's certainly calmed down, and it's much it's a much better relationship now. It's a bit calmer, and but it has got that traditional feel about it, which I quite like.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, she's still growing on me, but I think I'm in the minority, because looking at the newspapers and their reviews, they're very, very positive about her. So, and for the reasons you've said as well, that traditional feel about it. As I said, I didn't enjoy Frank Cottrell-Boyce's first story for Doctor Who as much as you did. So I was feeling a little bit of trepidation maybe towards this one, but actually, I really, really liked the opening to it, and it was, well, I actually rather enjoyed it, you know, I really liked it.
There's nothing wrong with enjoying it.
Well, no, absolutely, and I thought, I loved the little emoji, but what do they call the Vardy, isn't it, the Vardy?
The Vardy, I think, were the little nanobots that swarmed.
Oh, right.
And the emoji bots were their servants.
Oh, I've seen.
But they, even they, although they were quite modern in terms of communicating with humans via emoji, they were also quite traditional, weren't they? Because we've seen in Doctor Who several times what happens when the servant goes bad. I mean, there's Robots of Death. Is a classic.
Yes.
I think there was a similar thing actually in Voyager the Damned, which reminded me a lot of Robots of Death. And I suppose, the Ood as well.
Yes, the Ood. And of course, this had a bit of an Ark in Space vibe as well, I felt.
It did, because of the cryogenic suspension of the last of the human race.
Yes, yeah.
Very, very traditional.
Did you think the emoji boss I really liked? I thought it was quite interesting, that little shorthand notation of seeing their face change like that, you know, I quite like that. But did you find the death with the bodies being reduced to a pile of bones like that? Do you think that was a bit, I don't know, was that suitable for children, do you think?
Well, I don't think there was any blood or gore involved, but it didn't look very pleasant.
No. I thought it was quite nice and dramatic. I liked that because I was just wondering, some of the papers were complaining, saying Doctor Who isn't suitable for children anymore, and I thought,
I think it is aimed at sort of the 12-year-old bracket anyway now, isn't it?
Based
on the certification of the Blu-rays.
Yeah, of course.
It has sort of moved a little bit into the sort of younger adults.
Yes, yeah. I think that's great. I love it. Scare them anyway.
Scare the children.
Yeah, I love it.
What Mary Whitehouse would have made of that sequence, she'd probably have been quite cross.
Yes, yeah.
She was cross about a lot less than that.
Yeah. She was, yeah. It could be anything. Goodness knows what she would have made of Bill's relationship last week. That would have been a right old placard waving.
I think possibly if it if the payoff of her sexuality is that she doesn't fancy the Doctor, then I think we could see more traditional relationship, which we are seeing, and we've said that several times.
Yeah,
one thing I do want to say before we forget, visually, the show was absolutely fantastic this week.
It was brilliant.
That location.
Yeah.
And that cornfield.
It was gorgeous, wasn't it? Really.
I loved it.
Yeah, me too. I was quite stunned, actually, when it opened. I thought the design of the build, I'm actually watching it on iPlayer now as we speak.
Oh, right.
Looking at, and the sunlight on the cornfield and the white building in the back. It looks fabulous, doesn't it?
Well, I can tell you exactly where that building is.
Right.
Because I've actually been to it.
Really? Where is it?
Yes, I have. It's in Valencia in Spain.
Oh, my gosh.
It's called, let me have a look, it's called the City of Arts and Sciences.
Wow.
And I visited Valencia in 2005 as they were just building the last bit of the park.
Really? Wow. Mm. So is that cornfield there, or is that sort of...
No. The actual, that sort of oystery building in the middle is actually surrounded by water.
Ah,
yes.
Right. Wow.
So the cornfield and the building were obviously a composite shot created on a computer.
Oh, they've done a good job.
They did do a good job of melding the two images. But as I say, if you look up the City of Arts and Sciences in Valencia,
right,
that's the building, and they used the interiors there as well. And I did, as I say, I did actually visit it many, many, many years ago before it was quite finished, or as it was being finished.
Yes.
Wow. So that's where that is.
That
so
is great.
It was overseas filming, by the looks of things.
Yeah. A few people have said that the trip to Spain was well worth the expense, but they didn't say exactly where the filming was done. So
Well, they via green screen, they went to Sydney, Australia last week, but that didn't fool me for a minute.
Oh, no. There was it looked absolutely first rate. It looked really nice.
And the story was so strong visually.
Yes.
It made such a great futuristic setting.
Oh yes, absolutely, it really was. It had this sense of it really was another world. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just picked up on another maybe reference as well. I'm wondering, is Stephen Moffat popping these things in everywhere for his last season? Because once the people have been reduced to skeletons, they are then used as fertilizer for the plants. Is this a Seeds of Death?
Seeds of Doom.
Seeds of Doom, sorry, scenario as well?
Very similar. I remember being scared witless at Harrison Chase and his people composter machine, which smashed them all up.
Yeah.
That was a cracker, that one.
It was great. I loved that. And it's being done...
A unit soldier who went in there and got crushed to bits and hulked.
And he was screaming as he was dragged in by the teeth.
Those teeth.
Yeah.
No wonder Mary Whitehouse was so angry.
Maybe she had a point. I don't know. I shouldn't say that.
I think the other really big tip of the hat to traditional William Hartnell Doctor Who this week was the fact that the episode ended and moved from the cliffhanger from this week into the start of next week's story.
Yes,
that's all we've got left of Marco Polo at the moment, is the footprint in the snow, because the previous story shows us the beginning of the next one.
That's really interesting.
Consciously, we've got that back. We've got in a way, it means Nardol won't be in it next week because he's not aboard.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a sadness unless they can find a way to bring him in.
Yeah, it is a pity.
Maybe he will be, maybe he won't be. I can't second guess.
Yeah.
But it was good, the fact that they actually reinstated that way of doing things, because the Doctor Who adventures of late have been self-contained adventures.
Yeah.
And then the Doctor may have changed location completely in the interim
during
the last adventure. So maybe that's nicer in a way than having a through line of story, although clearly the Doctor's on Earth to protect that whatever's in that vault.
Yes, yeah.
levers in there.
But I agree with you. I like that sort of run on that. I don't know, is it like in poetry, it would be sort of like an enjambment, isn't there? A running, running on, you know, into the next next line, isn't it? I like that at the end, though I have to say, on my TV anyway, that elephant looked a little bit green screened onto that background there. Did it come?
What do you think, the elephant with one tusk, was he CGI, do you think?
Oh, do you think he was CGI?
He might be CGI, might be.
Oh, right, I see.
There was an elephant in a William Hartnell story called The Ark. No, they probably haven't CGI'd him. It probably is an elephant.
Yeah, perhaps it
You're
is.
Right,
yeah.
Probably is with green screen.
Yeah.
Find a one-tusked elephant.
Yeah, I've no idea.
Unless they painted his other tusk out just to give him a bit more backstory. I don't know.
That's interesting. There's a mystery there to be said.
There's a mystery there for next week.
Yeah. Well, what did you think overall? So we've got this story now. They've set up. They've landed on this planet. We have the scenario of the an ark again from Earth.
And it's being fed on by a parasite, seemingly.
Yes.
Except it isn't. But that's what the Wirren were.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've got much the same arrangement, although it's happening for quite different reasons.
Yeah. Did it seem plausible to you? Because I thought the Doctor was a little bit quick. Once he'd realised what was going on, he was a bit quick to say he wanted to blow the place up.
Right.
How did you feel about that?
Well, I didn't mind him wanting to blow the place up too much.
Right.
But what I did object to, and this is where the episode fell to bits for me. So it's the elephant in the room, coming back to the elephant. And it was the fact that he just did the sonic screwdriver reset.
Yes.
Again.
Yeah.
And I was really hoping for something better.
Yeah.
Given the quality of the writing to that point. I thought, oh, Lord, he's just gone and press the reset button again, which is how Stephen Moffat resolves an awful lot of his plots, it seems to me.
That was
disappointing.
I felt disappointed because I was, as we say, that visually and the relationship with the Doctor and Bill and the scenario we were having, everything was set up, but I felt the plot ran out of steam, and again it was this. I don't know if I'd blame Stephen Moffat for that. I felt it was Frank Cottrell Boyce. I don't know.
All I'm saying is it's become too often used as a magical resolution.
Yeah.
Any story that you can't think of another way out of. So in many ways, had the Doctor blown it up, at least that would have been, I won't say the word traditional again because that's getting boring, but at least that would have been different.
Yes, yeah, that's true. That's true. It would have been different, and it would have been a sort of action which, it could have led into another bit of drama, really, the fact that he was going to blow them up so quickly. Maybe, Bill could have pulled him back towards a different humanity view of things. I don't know, but I just felt it did do that. It was a little bit quick and
convenient.
Rushed. Convenient, yeah, convenient. But I did feel as well, Ralph Little, the actor, was, I think he was a bit wasted in this, really, do you think?
Which, he was a character called Steadfast.
Yes, that's right. I think he was the first one to be revived, wasn't he?
Yes, I think he's the guy with the gun.
Yes.
Yeah, isn't he?
That's right, yes, yeah. I felt, because he was, and because he writes and acts in The Royal Family, which is a great comedy series, I think he's very talented, but he came across as a bit of an old school, stifled character. There wasn't any depth to him.
Right.
I don't know if you felt that.
Well, I didn't really realise he was famous, to be honest.
Oh, right, right.
I knew. I've heard of the name, actually.
Right, yes.
I have heard of the name.
He wrote with Caroline.
Perhaps he's got children and they really wanted him to be in Doctor Who at any cost.
Yeah, that's true. That's probably the reason, actually. There's a lot of that, isn't it? In Doctor Who, old and new, isn't it?
But he was, yes, he was a bit trigger happy, wasn't he?
He was.
But then, from
happy,
his
yeah.
perspective, those emoji bots and the Vardy had been eating all of his friends.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think he had every right to be a bit angry.
I agree, but you know, in the Ark in Space, which is a very similar setup, where you had an invading parasite which was living off them. I would say, well, of course, they pull the guns out and they defend themselves. And they go. But I thought, with this, it's their own robot. Surely somebody should have thought, well, let's restart them like the Doctor. Or
reboot them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because they weren't an alien threat which was coming in. Like, I mean, they were a threat, obviously, but it just didn't make sense to me.
Right.
You know, I just thought that's... I was looking for a more eloquent sort of scenario, really.
An intellectual solution.
Yes, I think so.
Find the reset button.
Exactly. And it was a real pity because I was loving so much of this story.
I was loving it as well.
Yeah, yeah. I loved the engine room. I loved the, you know, when they were in there, there was quite a sort of traditional looking one. I loved the way they had that old sort of steampunk engine that he's working on.
Oh, yeah.
And sorry, I'm laughing because I just remembered, of course, what he does. He pulls the some of the cables out and just plugs them into the opposite ones, doesn't he? And of course, it says then, no, oh, that's not supposed to happen. I like that.
Oh, they made another reference to his running as well.
Oh, they did. And do you know, did you notice?
On fire.
Yes, they did again. And I think he's actually playing up to this with the running. Have
I
you
think
noticed?
He is.
Yeah, I think. Isn't that clever, though? He's recognised, you know, something. He can't run. And it's a bit of a joke. But he's exaggerating it and working with it to make it even better part of his character.
To make it a gimmick.
Yeah, yeah. I thought
I wonder how many episodes he'll run in.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's going to run in all of them.
I'm
trying
to find it. Yeah, I've just watched him do a bit of running there. No, he can't run.
It's but great, though.
Ergonomically, he's moving very well.
But isn't that the mark of a great actor? He's looked at
something. Yes, they can build it in.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought that's really good, that, you know, he's... because it's not... Because Roger Moore's another famous actor who can't run, isn't he? And but he always had doubles in the James Bond from behind. Wow. He'd have doubles because he couldn't run, you know. So whereas Capaldi thought, right, you know, this is what I'll do. I'll make a big old gimmick of it. What else do you feel about this story, David? So we had this this disappointing ending, really, didn't we?
We did. I would say that this story was, on balance, better than last week's.
Yes. Oh, definitely.
I found there was more to love in it. I mean, all we really got last week was a puddle.
Yeah,
I think there was more going on in this one.
Yes, yeah, there was a lot more.
Stripped of, visually it was brilliant, as we've said. Comically it was brilliant.
Yeah,
there was a bit where the Doctor passed the spanner back to what he thought was his assistant.
I like that.
He sort of made from with one movement, realizing it was emoji bot. He sort of changed the movement into sort of cracking it round the head.
Yes, I like that.
To his ankle.
Yeah.
Precipice. I thought this was a bit Empire Strikes Back-y. Or not Empire Strikes Back, Star Wars.
Yes.
I thought that's Obi-Wan Kenobi trying to turn off the tractor beam.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the bit at the end of Empire Strikes Back when Luke Skywalker loses a hand. He's saying, you know, he'd rather fall to his death than be saved by his evil pappy.
Sorry, yes. You wouldn't say that bit again.
I thought that was all good stuff as well. I think this was better than last week and more engaging.
Yes, yeah. I think, you're right about that, Obi-Wan Kenobi, but it really is, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, because now he even wears a cowl.
Yeah.
As we said last week, he's now this monk stroke hermit.
Yeah. And it's brown as well, the same colour as Obi-Wan Kenobi's.
So it's in Obi-Wan's colours as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's really interesting. We're getting a lot of hidden references in this series.
Well, we probably make them up, but yes, we do.
It's fun anyway, it's fun anyway. One thing, another glitch in this this storyline, I felt, was the sudden appearance of the son of, you know, the woman who was killed right at the beginning in that opening scene, and her son suddenly, that's all a bit bizarre, isn't it? I couldn't get how that fitted at all, you know. So this small boy is revived, and then he's just sort of, what, spat out of the cryogenic chamber, and he's wandering about saying, are we there yet? I don't... it's just, what a coincidence that it's that woman's son who's revived, you know. It's just, I don't know.
I think it was supposed to be through the eyes of a child. It was supposed to be childish innocence, wasn't it? I mean, that character was the one who made friends with the emoji bot.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was to bring an unsullied perspective onto the situation.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't think of any other reason to do it.
No.
Just to a child in peril is probably more dramatic than an adult in peril.
Yes, yeah.
Perhaps, I don't know.
Yeah.
I really thought about the appearance of the child, to be honest, but... Yeah. Yes, I can see. I suppose it was his time for revival and he just turned up.
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel... when Charles Dickens used to do these things, and he did them, you know, several times a chapter, it was just... great. It was for a he was out to do something, wasn't he, with it? Whereas I just felt this, it just didn't work, right. You know, for me anyway. But so, what do you feel then, David? What sort of mark are you going to place on Smile?
Well, I gave last week's 6, didn't I? And you chided me.
Well,
being a bit generous over an adventure starring a puddle, which is okay. So I think probably on reflection, I probably was generous.
Right.
But I'm generous of spirit. So I'm going to give this one a 7.
Oh.
To reflect the fact I enjoyed it more than last week.
That's really interesting, because that's exactly the figure that I'm giving it.
Right.
I thought it did deserve a 7. Most of this story I thoroughly enjoyed. It was...
I agree with you.
You know, it was just you know, the last few furlongs. Yes, yeah, which we just have to give you a congratulations on air, David, because I mentioned... Now, what can you tell people what happened yesterday?
Yes, I do remember yesterday. I completed the London Marathon yesterday.
That is fun.
Which is something that I've been training for all year.
Yeah.
So that was a good feeling. I enjoyed yesterday.
Yeah, really
good.
And
I'm not too much pain today as well, which is good.
That's impressive, actually. That's very impressive. And actually, what other else was impressive? Do you want to say the time you did it in? Because that was...
I don't think the time was particularly impressive, but I did it in 4 hours, 26 minutes, and 8 seconds.
Wow, very good.
But the brilliant thing was, I was on telly. I was on TV as I came in for the finish.
Yes.
And I'm not impartial, but in my universe, that was the best thing on telly this weekend. And... Doctor Who was by the by. I think he was the highlight of the weekend. But other people have a different view, and I'll accept that.
Oh, that's great. Well done, David. That's a real achievement.
Thank you.
Now, next week, of course, we're going to be the review. Now, I will put out a little apology. We did record a really long and interesting review of The Space Pirates a few weeks back, and... We've both been a bit hectic lately, so it is a bit late coming out, but I'll try to get it out later in the week.
All right.
But next week's episode, David, is called Thin Ice.
Thin Ice.
Yes. Now, we saw a little bit, we mentioned about that, the little bit going into next week's episode we had at the end of this one. How do you think it looked?
I think it has potential.
Yeah.
It's very interesting, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
And I see the Doctor changes his costume out of his monk's outfit, and he becomes Victorian-looking.
Oh.
And I think he looks more doctorly when he does that.
Yes, that is really interesting. And
not just the costume. I think there's going to be quite a lot of interest in the next episode.
Yes, yeah.
We'll have to wait and see.
Yes, well, I think so.
Because next week.
Well, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. When I like a period Doctor Who like that.
Oh, I like period Doctor Who.
And we do know that the Thames did used to freeze over, didn't they? Used to have fairs on it, I think, David, didn't they?
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. And also, it's written by Sarah Dollard, who I was really impressed with her episode last year about those hidden spaces, you know, the hidden little streets, and it was the one that Clara died in.
Oh, the Face the Raven.
That's it. Yeah, she wrote Face the Raven. I was really impressed with her, and I saw her speaking about her episode and why it was chosen by Stephen Moffat to be made and so forth, and she was really impressive. I really liked her. And it just struck me, Victoria Lund, she's come up with this idea because I just think London has got that. You don't know what bits of history. I mean, when you've given me a tour of these places in London, you just don't know what's around the corner, do you? What bits of history? It's fabulous. It's really interesting. I don't know. I'm imagining now what she's going to do with it, but I like the fact that she has fired my imagination so far. So
well, it's good. Yes, it's good that you're... sense of expectation is very, very high.
Yes, yeah. Thin ice. So we've got drama. We've got literally thin ice. So is the ice going to break on the Thames?
Oh, there's something under the ice, isn't there?
There's
something lurking under the ice. Oh. We don't know what it is yet.
Yes, it could be. Well,
it's probably unpleasant.
It's probably. I hope so. I hope it's going to be unpleasant. Oh, well... David, it's really interesting that we both agreed on bang on with 7 out of 10 for this one. So, but yeah, much more enjoyable than last week. So I'm starting to feel a lot more optimistic about this season now, I feel. And David, we're going to have to leave you to recover from the exhaustion you must be feeling now after the run on the weekend. But thank you very much for giving your review and... goodbye. We'll be back next week to review Thin Ice. Please tweet us at Doctor Who on Target. That's DR Who on Target. Or email us at DoctorWhoOnTarget@gmail.com. That's the end of this episode, and I would like to thank BBC Audio and Penguin Random House for kindly supplying us with preview copies, and to Smerin's Antisocial Club for the use of their version of the Doctor Who theme tune. The biggest thank you goes to you, our listeners.